Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned into The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and all that nasty selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight aimed at making each of us more responsible, much more cooperative, and increasingly aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us, no matter what we find to squabble over in the interim. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call us from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call us direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online and may also be able to get it on the air in your local area to find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show. You just contact us at bbsradio.com. We'll tell you. The website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as is humanly or even extra-humanly possible, thanks to Dawn, on the station archives. Now, my own blog is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom and is conveniently located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. This week, the article at the top of my blog site is titled Larry Lessons on the World of the Neocons. In case you didn't guess, it's all about Larry Craig. I suspect from the senator's habits that he is related to a clutch of Craigs I know from Ohio. But it's a very common name, so we can't really be sure. But I really prefer the title suggested in the graphic that I put up on the site, and that is Just Flush. Check it out. But before we do that, there are a few other items of interest. Just when you thought you'd seen it all, those indomitable Ron Paul supporters who are changing the way politics works and injecting some old-fashioned American innovation and great dollops of truth, more amazing things happen. In Florida, an activist got a plane. He took it up, and he sent a message flashing from the sky to onlookers below. That message was sent August 28th and was visible all over Orlando. It read, Ron Paul for President, 2008, Google Ron Paul. And it went on to say that he was the champion of the Constitution, which is all true, of course. If you've Googled Ron Paul, you will know why this is in itself an education. Naturally, the YouTube video went up nearly immediately to the tones of Mission Impossible, which we know was never really impossible, was it? Good theme there. And it's now clear that Ron is a top-tier candidate. Breaking news. This article to that effect appeared in the USA Daily. We picked it up at lourockwell.com, the site that is covering the Ron Paul revolution on a nanosecond by nanosecond basis. Here's the story. The media monopoly seemed to be only fooling themselves. The cat is out of the bag. Ron Paul is a top-tier candidate. Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul is a force to be reckoned with within the GOP. According to the last quarter filings, he has more money in the bank than John McCain, and sources say tell USA Daily that Paul's next quarter numbers will surpass expectations. Fundraising ability is as much an indicator of a campaign's popularity as her poll numbers. Whether you agree with Paul or not on the issues, his campaign is serious and has national support despite media censorship. Paul's campaign is a coalition of libertarians, traditional conservatives, constitutionalists, independents, anti-war voters, and those opposed to establishing what they perceive as a global tyranny via the unelected world government or precursors like the North American Union. It is even attracting some traditional liberals opposed to the Iraq War that like his support for the Constitution. Whether this translates into a majority of voters or not remains to be seen, but Paul has demonstrated fundraising ability, organization, and the ability to build a coalition. His volunteers go beyond just the Internet. Homemade signs and other forms of promotion are popping up all across America in support of Ron Paul. often with a creativity that reflects a wide range of the type of supporters he attracts. Paul has bold positions, including opposition to income tax, the Patriot Act, the Iraq War, and the Federal Reserve. His call to abolish the Federal Reserve may play well with voters as the mortgage crisis deepens if he can frame the issue to point to the soft money policies of the Federal Reserve as a contributing factor to the crisis. While SEC laws exempt debates from the equal time requirement, the modern notion of fairness in a free society would suggest that broadcast networks provide candidates with equal time during the debates. The 2008 campaign is different from previous elections. In the past, third-party candidates have been censored from debates, but candidates involved in the actual major party debates were usually given a fairer distribution of time. Major media attempts at manipulating this election are more blatant than in the past. It remains to be seen whether the upcoming Fox News Republican debate will break that trend. With many states moving their primaries up, there are likely to be many more debates in various states that are now more involved with the election process, which may help media, non-preferred candidates, get the message out. Paul's campaign will likely win his home state, delegate-rich Texas, one of the many states up for grabs on February 5th. That prospect will likely keep his campaign viable until the Texas primary, even if he doesn't win any of the early primary elections. Chances are the February 5th election will not have a decisive winner in all 23 states up for grabs. Tancredo's campaign is also likely to remain viable until February 5th, when his home state of Colorado and other western states are up for grabs, where his signature issue of immigration reform will play well, as will Paul's message. Giuliani's home state of New York and other states in the Northeast will also be decided that day, as will Fred Thompson's home state of Tennessee and Mike Huckabee's home state of Arkansas. The unpredictability of having so many states that in the past voted in the primary only when the nominee was already a foregone conclusion, now having real input and influence over the election, may make this presidential contest a free-for-all for all. There are demographics and regional influences that never really had a chance to participate in the presidential primary election that may turn out to be the kingmakers. A look at the primary calendar, competing ideologies, and regional factors point to a slight chance that the GOP nominee will be decided at the convention. The tempo of a presidential campaign has never been more ferocious. Never has there been so much at stake for America. And now, just as much at stake, we are slowly coming to understand. Our guest today will be of particular interest if you live in Los Angeles, but don't fool yourself. All of us are in danger. Under discussion today will be the kill-off, depopulating America. Is Los Angeles first? The question that we pose: has the Bush administration made plans to kill off a portion of the present population of the United States for a reason that serves their ends? If so, what are those ends and who is targeted for death? Might one target be you? The subject seems to take us into a world that is more science fiction than reality. But given the many things Bush Co. has done that make no sense, unless you let the actions speak their truth through time, it is probably a good idea to consider the facts very carefully. The means for accomplishing this eugenics project is, according to Janet Phelan, journalist and researcher, the water system. The Department of Water and Power in Los Angeles takes on a sinister character when you read the story written by Ms. Phelan. But it is a story you need to know. Ms. Phelan will be with us today here to discuss this disturbing question. Janet Phelan is an independent journalist with the American's Bulletin. She was educated at Grinnell College and USC Berkeley and did her graduate work in journalism at the University of Missouri Columbia. Her articles have appeared in the Los Angeles Times, the Santa Monica Daily Press, Long Beach Press Telegram, We Magazine, and elsewhere. Her poetry has been published in Afterwards, Gambit, Applezaba, Review, Libera, and other publications. Following a Public Records Act request for the water records of the city of Santa Monica in 2004, She found herself jobless and blacklisted in her chosen profession. She now resides in Oregon. Her first book, The Hitler Poems, was published in 2005. Please welcome Janet Phelan. Janet, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Melinda. How are you today?
I am just wonderful, and I'm so glad you could be with us today to discuss a very unappetizing topic, but I think a topic that Americans are now ready to really confront. And we always like to start by having our guests tell us something about themselves personally, and I didn't really get into much of your personal life, so why don't you tell us about just exactly who Janet is? I mean, maybe the name of your cat and, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful orange cat named Probation.
That's a great name.
Yeah, actually, there's kind of a cute story behind that. I was visiting a friend in Coeur d'Alene. I was living in Idaho for a year and I visited a friend in Coeur d'Alene, and she had two cats. She had an older cat and this young cat, an orange cat named Tiger. And the young cat, who was extremely affectionate and loving, had the bad habit of attacking the older cat. And my friend Sue just wanted, you know, the cat out of there. She really liked this orange, extremely affectionate cat, but he had some bad behavior. And she said, you know, he's just so sweet and loving, but he's got this bad problem. She said, he's like a good-looking guy on probation. You know, trouble. So I said, well, you know, I don't want to take the cat back to the animal shelter because they'll probably euthanize him, and I'll take him, and I named him Probation.
That's really sweet.
That's my cat. Yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it's a cute little story.
Yeah.
So, I'm here today to talk about water as it relates to Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are seeing, apparently, in Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act, the U.S. Patriot Act was rammed through Congress following the events of 9/11. I understand that what I have heard is that the U.S. Congress did not carefully read the U.S. Patriot Act, but Section 817.
Well, that is when that nastiness was going on about the anthrax, too.
Right. Well, people were alarmed. People were frightened. People often don't use a lot of sense when they're frightened. And Section 817 is probably one of the more concerning pieces of legislation to actually inhabit now the legal landscape of the United States of America, because what this is essentially authorizing is poisoning people. Now, I've had, they obviously did not just come out and say, we're going to poison a bunch of people, but the language, which is somewhat opaque, I have submitted to a number of lawyers and, you know, with say, this is my take on it, what do you think? And the answers have come back that my take on this appears to be correct. Now, I have it right in front of me, and I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to go.
That's a great way place to start, and I'm grateful that you're going to do that, because it's so incredible that it's hard for people to believe, and they don't have it in front of them. So please go ahead and read it.
Right. I will read it, and then I may go into a little bit of the background about this. Okay. Expansion of the biological weapons statute. And there's some Chapter 10 of Title 18 United States Code is amended, and there's a little bit of changing here, but this is what we have. Additional offense. Whoever knowingly possesses any biological agent, toxin, or delivery system of a type or in a quantity that under the circumstances is not reasonably justified by a prophylactic, protective, bona fide research or other peaceful purpose shall be fined under this title, blah, blah. Okay, now, this, you know, looks fine, but you start looking at the language. Biological agents and toxins, toxins in particular, are poisons. And what this is saying, if you put the microscope to this section, what this is saying is that if you can justify the possession and deliver of a toxin, a poison, or a delivery system, if you can justify it by a prophylactic, protective, let's put aside research for a moment, or peaceful purpose, then it's okay. Now, delivery systems is a weapons terminology. Toxins, poisons are meant not to encourage and nurture life, but to terminate life. So what we have here is the legalization of peaceful, protective, prophylactic poisoning. Now, we are...
That's almost poetry. That's almost poetry.
Oh, well. Yeah, that's an interesting comment. According to the way the United States of America is set up, we have this equal protection under the law. We have due process. We don't have reasonably justified poisoning. If you look at the laws governing lethal injection, which, you know, a lot of people have differing opinions about, is considered a punishment for a crime. There is no mention in Section 817, which is the expansion of the biological weapons statute in the USA Patriot Act of 2001. There's no statement here about people committing crimes and therefore getting these delivery systems and toxins deployed against them. It just says it has to be done protectively, peacefully, and prophylactic, which means, of course, to contain or stop.
Mm-hmm.
So who is going to be the recipients of this? Now, you look a little further at the Act, and Section 175B talks about possession by restricted persons who can and cannot possess, ship, transport these agents. Now, who cannot do so, who are the restricted persons, indicates that we're not talking about a military operation where we might be using biological weapons against an enemy of the United States, because this is not put into an exclusive military dominion. And I will read right here, the restricted people who can't do this, okay, cannot possess the delivery systems and toxins or transport them, or we understand possibly deploy them, would be an individual who, people who cannot do it, or an individual who is under indictment for a crime punishable by imprisonment for a term exceeding 1 year, or B, has been convicted in any court of a crime punishable by imprisonment for a term exceeding 1 year, or C, a fugitive from justice, D, an unlawful user of any controlled substance, E, an alien illegally or unlawfully in the United States, F, has been adjudicated as a mental defective or has been committed to a mental institution, G, an alien other than an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence, H, has been discharged from the armed services of the United States under dishonorable conditions. So we have here a group of people who might be considered, marginal. We have criminals, we have adjudicated mental defectives, we have illegal aliens, etc. But it's not saying here that the only people who can have these are military personnel.
Mm-hmm.
So what it looks like here is...
aren't the people it's going to be used on. These are the people who are permitted to have it.
These are people who are not permitted to have it.
Oh, they're not permitted.
The only ones that are not permitted to have it. The ones who are not. You cannot.
Oh.
Criminals can't. Illegal aliens can't. People who've been adjudicated insane can't. So that removes certain people who might be considered marginal. But this is not stating here that these will only be allowed to be in the possession and transport of members of the military. It doesn't say that. So someone like you or me, Melinda, who, non-criminals, non-adjudicated insane, non-fugitives from justice, we could actually have these delivery systems and toxins, and I would assume that would also go.
That would imply we could use them.
Well, the delivery systems are for deployment. The delivery system is how you deliver a weapon. That's
right.
What that means. So it looks to me like people who work for departments of water and power could possibly fall into this category. So we have delivery systems and toxins, which may be in the possession of United States citizens who are not members of the military. We have a law which is essentially legalizing peaceful protective poisoning. Now, what does this mean? What does this mean in a country where we are protected by a constitution, where if we are to be put to death, it is done through due process? This circumvents due process.
You know what this sounds like to me? It sounds like late at night, after they've read some science fiction books they probably weren't old enough to take in.
This expansion of the biological weapons, that this has been on the books for a while. Now, this traces back to laws on biological weapons, which have been on the books for a while, and we all do know that the USA Patriot Act was authorized primarily by Michael Chertoff, who is now the director, secretary of Department of Homeland Security, and who may be our new Attorney General, depending on what happens there. So we have a law that is essentially legalizing poisoning. Now you said something about science fiction. This country that we live in, the United States of America, has had some very bad behavior toward some groups of people already. Look what happened with the Tuskegee experiments. A whole bunch of black people were given syphilis. According to Sue Arrigo, who claims to be have been with the CIA and is now hiding out in Ireland, according to her, Fort Detrick put together the AIDS virus, which was then shipped off to sickle cell clinics, and the infected blood, the blood contaminated with the AIDS virus, was shipped off to sickle cell clinics and to hospitals in Africa. And we certainly do, we are seeing what is happening in Africa with the AIDS virus. So we are actually living in a country which has not behaved very well towards certain minority groups.
Well, that's certainly true. And they have an amazing lack of conscience about a lot of other groups, too. Take a look at what they enabled to happen in Japan to the POWs there. Instead of holding them accountable, that the Japanese, who actually experimented on American POWs, they gave a pass if they could have access to the information that was thus gained. And I always have thought that was highly questionable, too. Their ethics don't even bear examination.
Well, you know, when you bring up the fact of human experimentation, there are individuals, as I'm sure you are aware, who are claiming now that they are being experimented on with microwave weaponry. In fact, there are massive numbers of people with very consistent stories concerning this. And we do know that under Operation Paperclip, those Nazi scientists who did human experimentation were transported over here and given jobs in our country. And they weren't all rocket scientists. They were also doctors involved in human experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the Tuskegee experiment except human experimentation?
Well, of course it was.
So,
and what they did is they took a look at a population they thought was expendable anyway.
Well, the whole concept of an expendable population, you know, goes to the core, I believe, of what we are seeing now under the current administration. I would like to be able to discuss a little bit of the details of this project.
Please, go ahead. I think it's fascinating.
Okay, well, we're talking, now my understanding about Section 817 is that it is an umbrella statute that is governing and legalizing a number of projects. A lot of people are getting concerned about food contamination. We certainly have a lot of people concerned about what is being put in the chemtrails and air contamination. I am personally aware of some very nasty stuff going on with pharmaceuticals in terms of what could be considered poison pharmaceuticals. But I have focused on the water system because of the pervasiveness of this system and my concerns that, given the fact that this is all over the United States, this system appears to be in every city and state in the United States of America. It also seems appears to be extant in some foreign countries as well. My concern is that we are seeing a system by which people all over this country could end up very badly hurt. Some of the work I did documenting this was in L.A. Some was in Spokane. I also have some very problematic water blueprints from Sandpoint, Idaho. So we seem to have this happening in diverse parts of the country.
And when we talked earlier, you said that you had had some interactions with the people where you are now, and that you had detected that there was a certain amount of disinformation going on and a reluctance to provide information about something that should be as clear as your water system.
Well, actually, the interchange back and forth that I have recently has been with the Department of Health in Washington, and I'm actually in Oregon right now, is where I'm living. But I have had communications back and forth between the Department of Health. Also here, I have one that just came in today from the city of Spokane, in which we have, shall we say, conflicting information, which is a nice way of saying somebody's lying. So it does appear that there is a pervasiveness. Actually, the standards for water programs essentially come from the AWWA, which provides manuals on how water systems should be set up. Interestingly enough, the AWWA manuals are provided worldwide, except in certain countries. And if you go on the AWWA website, you will see those countries pretty much constitute the rogue states. They are Iraq, Iran, the Sudan, Syria, Cuba, and if per my recollection, I believe Libya may also be in there also, but that is it. The AWWA standards, those manuals, are subscribed to apparently worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the problem that I have been working on attempting to document may or may not be extant worldwide, and I have no way of, at this point in time, of being able to speak to that except, you know, concerning the AWWA manuals.
Have you checked this with the FAO?
Sorry?
Have you checked it with FAO? Food and Agriculture Organization. You know, they take care of water issues for, internationally through the UN.
I have checked with the Environmental Protection Agency and with the Department of Homeland Security. I've been interfacing with a lot of domestic agencies. Given the amount of lies going on concerning this, I don't expect to contact the FAO and have them go, oh yeah, right, we're going to poison people in Germany too. You know, I don't expect at this point any honest response from anybody who may have better knowledge about this project. And let's talk a little bit about the project. What we're seeing here is double-line systems which are being controlled essentially by remote control valves. Now, double-line systems, you know, may or may not be a problem, except if the second line is carrying something
okay,
other than
let's
water.
Explain,
now,
let's explain to the listener exactly what the double-line system is, since they may not know.
Well, if down your street, underneath the pavement, there are two lines which are being designated as water lines. Per the blueprints that I have, and I was able to email you off some blueprints a few minutes ago.
Yes, and I looked at them. Thank you.
Appear to be cross-connected. Now, cross-connecting potable and non-potable water is illegal, but the lines do appear to be cross-connected. Now, the question becomes, are both lines carrying potable water? And according to Marlene Feist, who is, I believe I'm pronouncing her name correctly, she is with she's with the city of Spokane. She is stating that the two lines both do connect water, but they are definitely not cross-connected. Well, according to the blueprints and the specs on the blueprints, they are cross-connected. Now, the question becomes, why do we have redundancy in the water lines? Why do we have a second line? Where's the line going? Now, according to Carolyn Cox, who is with the Department of Health in Washington, the line is going, carrying water to a water treatment facility. Now, if it's going to a water treatment facility, then it is apparently going to be treated and is non-potable.
Yes, that would be certainly true.
Right. So we have the Department of Health saying one thing. We have the city of Spokane saying something else. Now, according to the specs on these blueprints, both lines are placed 5.5 feet deep. That's what the specs say. But I have now have a just coming in today, I have an email from City of Spokane, Marlene Price, saying that they are not cross-connected. And they are, even though they appear, it appears, she states, that they're both 5.5 feet deep, they are actually not. Even she's saying the specs are wrong. So the blueprints
are
lying, Marlene's telling the truth, Carolyn's not telling the truth. What's going on here?
Well, this is a very troubling because, of course, the specs exist so that at some point in the future, if you need to get down there and do something with the lines, that information will be available so that that's easily facilitated. So if they're inaccurate, then that's an issue and it needs to be checked.
Well, see, the problem is that nobody will give out blueprints either. Now, when I made a blueprint request at the City of Los Angeles recently, I was told that they would be glad to give me blueprints and they would all be redacted. Now, redacted means that information is excised or altered. And every single blueprint that I got from the City of Los Angeles was stamped redacted. Now, interestingly enough, there were no double lines shown, even though I had already viewed and photographed some blueprints from the exact same project that showed double lines on every street. The redacted blueprints showed no double lines and no valves. Now, let's talk a minute about valves. Because valves
are interesting.
If you have something in the second line which might be problematic, you certainly don't want it mixing freely all the time with this cross connection that's going into the main water line. You would want to inhibit it, and then when you are ready, you would want to release it. And
now, the valves are located. How are they accessed so that they could be turned on and turned off? Is this done electronically?
Well, traditionally, valves were operated manually. But when I started looking at this at one of the projects in LA, and I was hanging around the street crew and asking them questions, and my hunch was that we're dealing with remote control capabilities, and I asked some of the guys, street workers, they're just putting down valves. They have no idea if there might be a problem or not. And I asked them, hey, are these remote controlled? And they said, oh, yeah, this is where the chip is. They're right down here. Let me show you where the chip is.
Oh, they're chipped.
They're chipped. So they're chipped. And not only that, some of the valves, and there are some on the website, the name of the article is Water as a Weapon. You can find it on Miami Indie Media. It was also the featured story in the July issue of the American Bulletin. There is one of the documents that is on the Miami Indie Media website, which is showing a row of valves, some of which you can see chalked in RFID addresses. Now, I ran this by some engineers I know, and he says, yes. They say, yes, that's how they delineate them. They chalk them on so that they will be readily apparent to those who are, you know, handling these. I also have a valve from Spokane, Washington, that was sitting by the side of the street waiting to be put under the street, which had a chalked-in RFID address. When I brought this to the attention of Brian Snipes, who was the on-site foreman, who was very nervous about the questions I was asking, he said, well, they just put that on in the factory, and he actually ran away from me. So I do have a photograph of that as well. We have valves that are remote-controlled. Now, interestingly enough about this aspect, I did an interview with the resident engineer for one of the projects in Los Angeles. This was called the Ardmore Street Project. They're doing the street in sections. And they're doing the city in sections. They're redoing the water system and putting these remote control valves on in sections. And I asked him about remote control valves, and he said there is no such thing as a remote-controlled water valve.
That's ridiculous.
Very, very definitive about that. This is a master's degree man who has worked for the city of Los Angeles per his own statements for 15 years.
Why in the world wouldn't they have them? It certainly existed technologically for much longer than that.
Right. And anybody who wants to know if these things exist, you can also Google remote-controlled water valves. You can Google solenoid water valves. These things exist. Now, if they were going to release what may be in the second line into the main line, in a sense, and I will go into the targeting selective aspect of this in a moment, if they were going to release these into the main line, it would make sense that to do so remotely, because if at the time of deployment, they have people running around digging up the street and changing the valves in front of people's houses, people are going to go, well, what's going on?
Well, there would be questions asked. You couldn't do that. It's too much trouble, and it takes too long.
Takes too long and arouses too much alarm.
Yes.
So if they want to release what is in what I call the Viper line into the main line in order to go into someone's house, they would be doing it remote control, through remote control valves. Now, everybody that I'm asking who's working for the cities in engineering capacities in water, when I ask them questions about remote control valves, they deny that they exist. Now, why would that be? I would like to refer you to a website which is also mentioned in the article. It's called the ROM communications website. And on there is a diagram on that website that shows how one can access from a laptop or cell phone or computer, how one can access what they call a remote asset. And one of the remote assets that is featured and pictured in this diagram is a water valve. So it's very simple. I mean, you initiate the command off of the cell phone, laptop, whatever. It goes into the internet, and then we see where it goes up to a satellite. And in the far left-hand corner, we see what the assets may be. You have an oil well, you have this, that, and the other thing, and you have a water valve. And that, in a very simplistic diagram, is how it is done. Now, this aspect of using, satellites in order to influence remote assets brings us back to one of the manufacturers of these valves. Some of these valves are being manufactured by a company called U.S. Pipe. And if you look at the career paths of some of the people who are highly placed in U.S. Pipe, you will find something rather shocking. Here, we have it. I have it right here. We have Ray Torok, T-O-R-O-K, who is the president of U.S. Pipe, and who had worked for can you help me out here? He had been
for
one of the aerospace companies.
What, Boeing?
No, I haven't. Actually, I'm looking through my stuff right here, because I should have this right in front of me, and apparently my copy machine didn't copy the whole thing. I can look it up real quickly. He was not at Boeing. I think he was at Burns or Alcoa. There's also a Walter Nolenberg who was with Alcoa, and Walter Nolenberg, who was one of the VPs for U.S. Pipe, was with Burns Aerospace Division.
Uh-huh. Burns Aerospace.
So you have two men highly, highly placed with U.S. Pipe who worked with companies making spy satellites. It's a very strange career path to go from spy satellites into plumbing unless there's a connection. And I am seeing at the ROM communications website.
This is actually a very mature technology. It's not rocket science at all, so you're right. I mean, all the stuff relating to the remote control of of this sort of thing is they sort of been endemic in even the petroleum industry because it's used there too.
Yeah, I have here an email that came in today from that Marlene Feist with Spokane City in the Water Department, and I have questions and answers, and one of my questions here, how can the lines not be cross-connected? The blueprints indicate they must be. Both lines are placed 5.5 feet deep, and the lines running off the 12-inch main are not flexible.
If they're coming off a main, I mean, you wouldn't put a waistline on a main.
A what?
You wouldn't put the waistline, wouldn't go back to the clean water.
Well, the question is, you cannot legally cross-connect potable with non-potable water. It's been written into law.
Well, it's crazy.
I personally viewed and photographed the non-connecting pipe, which must connect the 12-inch and the 36-inch pipe, given the non-flexible nature of that pipe. And this is her answer. My engineers tell me that the lines are buried at slightly different depths to accommodate the individual service lines, those lines that serve the individual residents and businesses, hooked into the 12-inch pipe. Well, the blueprint indicated that the two lines should be offset to accommodate the service lines. They are not cross-connected. Well, the blueprints do not indicate any offset. The problem here is that we have redundancy in the water system. Now, why would that be? Why do we need two lines on your street? And why are people lying about what is obvious cross-connection? Now,
well,
both lines are...
The reason that they would be lying about it is because obviously the point that you've made is that there is an agenda going on here, and the agenda, of course, is the frightening part of all of this. If they had some rational reason for doing it, then of course they wouldn't mind discussing it. But the fact is, if there's obfuscation going on, then they have an agenda that they don't want to discuss. It doesn't make any sense to have that configuration for the plumbing. And it certainly doesn't make any sense not to talk about it if they did. I have, as a matter of fact, my dad used to bring these drawings home, and I'm very familiar with them, and I never saw such a thing.
Well, the question is, what are they trying to do here? Why does Section 817 of the Patriot Act, it is essentially legalizing poisoning, so what's going on in this country?
Okay.
The stripping of civil rights that has followed 9/11 is what we usually see when a country moves towards a fascistic dictatorship. Now, there's a lot of concerns going on in that perspective of what Mr. Bush is up to. And, for those who have not learned the lessons of history, fascistic dictatorships involve killing people. This is what history has taught us.
That's true. So this brings us to an interesting point. If they're going to all this trouble to sort of obviously get at particular people, which particular people is it they want to get to?
I'm sorry, I just took a bite of my burrito.
Well, I hope it's good.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's beef and cheese. I'm
just trying to say that to make us hungry.
And I actually have to fuel the... I have to fuel myself every now and then. So
that's a good thing.
Well, that's a very good question, Melinda, because the way I look at the world, it really doesn't matter who they're going to kill. They shouldn't kill anybody.
Well, that goes without saying.
We see certain groups that are really not being treated well in this country. The black people have not been treated well in this country. The Indians have not been treated well in this country. The Japanese, during World War II, not treated well in this country. We have Christian patriots now. We have patriots, period, now, who are, who are frightened. We have people being detained. We have worse going on. Look what happened to Gary Webb.
Right.
Look what happened to Jim Hatfield.
So are you saying that you think that what's going on here is that they're going to be, this is going to be an ethnic targeting?
I think so. And that brings ethnic and possibly class related as well. I have looked at One of the things I wanted to bring up here is the activities of the, of the U.S. Water Resources Council. The U.S. Water Resources Council, which was folded into the Office of Management and Budget in, I believe it was 81, was doing some very interesting things. Now, if you look at the ECFR, I believe it was Title 18, Chapter 701, which was governing the activities of the U.S. Water Resources Council, you will see where that group was collecting records on U.S. citizens. And if you look at the nature of those records, it becomes, once again, rather alarming, because the U.S. Water Resources Council, the records, which is what was delineated in the ECFR, involved medical records, your financial transactions, your criminal history,
so they're
your employment history. So that, yeah.
And so what they want to do, perhaps, is automate it. So they take a look at, this is sort of goes to the whole idea of eminent domain. So if they can figure out a better use for the space you occupy, they simply eliminate you?
Well, I'm not, you know, you're taking it better use for the space you occupy. I am not speaking as to the kind of mindset and what in the world is going on between these people's ears. But the fact is, if they were going to attack certain groups of citizens, they would want the demographics on those groups. You know, who are you wealthy? Are you educated? You know, are you a criminal? They also have your psychiatric records, according to what I saw here. Now, why would the U.S. Water Resources Council want this information?
Well, because it would be useful to them if they knew if they were going to eliminate you.
Through the water system.
Oh. Right. That would make perfect sense.
Sounds best to me. You know, one of the problems that I have encountered in trying to explain this project to people is that it does sound, as you suggested earlier, like science fiction. But the fact
Let me point something out about who we're talking about here. We're talking about people who grew up on science fiction. Newt Gingrich would have been, this has his fingerprints all over it. And he is all about this stuff. It's the kind of science fiction he writes. You know, you can tell a lot about people when you find out about exactly what their backgrounds are that way. And this wouldn't surprise me at all about these people, because they all lived in a fantasy world. I mean, most of them, you know, their first experience with anything was exactly this sort of thing. It was, a science fiction, you know, fantasy that they were living out, because they didn't have normal, you know, social relationships. They're really very strange people, you know.
Well, you know, very strange. That's an interesting, I agree that they're very strange people. And your, that comment of yours goes, I think, to the core of who is in power and what their mindset is, because very strange people often kill people.
They do.
Very strange people, particularly psychopaths, tend to be very covert and duplicitous concerning their activities.
And they tend to be Straussians, too. And you can see that this looks like a Straussian sort of thing as well.
Well, we are living in very strange times, and my concern here is that given that we can now legally poison people, given that we have a double line system running down the streets of what appears to be most communities in America, given that they want to lie about this particular system, what are we facing? Now, considering water issues, I want to bring up something else very quickly. According to the head of Idaho Water Resources, they have now GPS the wells in North Idaho. According to the press in the area of North Idaho, they are now dumping poisons into the pristine lakes in North Idaho and other communities, other states as well, under the guise of pretext of eliminating a weed which is non-responsive to the poisons. Water is life. And when you mess with the water, you're messing with life.
That's absolutely true. And this is, there are so many different things that you've brought up, or there are definitely issues of concern that we have to take very seriously. And let's, we're kind of running up against our, you know, closing time. And I want to ask another question. What can people do to defend themselves against this?
Well, I have a couple of different ideas here. One thing I think is very important is that we start to band together and to organize on this issue. I would encourage people who have heard this interview and who have some concern about this. There is a video now on the web called We Are Not Safe. And it goes into, for about 15 minutes, goes into this water issue. If you view the video and find it, you know, sufficiently...
And that's We Are Not Safe.
We Are Not Safe. It is on both Google Video and on YouTube. You can contact me, and free of charge, I will send you the video with the stipulation that you put it into your community. Most libraries will let you have some space. You can show it, put up signs around town, show it in the library, and start to inform and organize people on a grassroots level about this. We need to protect ourselves, and guns will not protect ourselves from the water coming into our own home.
Amen. Well, that's...
So, information is the very first step. We need to make people aware that this is, that this appears to be in play.
Mm-hmm.
I would be glad to send out these videos free of charge with the stipulation that this be brought into the community. I have some other organizing tools that I have developed. You can take them or not take them at your own wish, but we need to start to organize on a grassroots level about this project.
Well, that's some really good advice.
Ourselves.
That's wonderful advice, and I'll put that up on my site, too. I have a site, Connect, about resources that come, you know, that people can become aware of through the show so they can go there and look at it. And that's at the bottom of Spiritual Politician. I want to thank you for being with us today, and I hope you're going to come back again. So that
I would
we
like
can...
to, Melinda, I'd like to give out my email address.
Oh, please do.
Contact me. Thank you. Okay. It's Janet C. Phelan at yahoo.com. And Phelan is P as in poison, H as in Helen, E-L-A-N as in Nancy. So that's Janet C. Phelan at yahoo.com. Contact me, and I will send you the video. And we can start to get to work and to come together to protect our own selves and our own communities.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. This has been fascinating and certainly very timely. And God bless, and I hope you're going to be back with us again soon.
Thank you so much. And God bless you.
God bless you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help individuals find the ideas that make all human organizing tools, like government, send the right message. That's the message that says, I love you. We're connected. We're one in the sacred. Many of us see that sacred presence as Jesus, but it doesn't matter. Never sweat the small stuff. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to establish new forms that to them shall most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And we should all be careful about what we drink from our faucet. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that eventually brings all of us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.